Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here in WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Pro Wrestling Year Review Series continues with November. We're almost done, everybody, right? Almost done. November 2021, a supersized episode of this one, to say the least. Myself and Andrew Thompson of PostWrestlingDusk.com. This is a first-time guest. I'm glad to have him. We talked, man. We talked a lot. An hour 45. This one clocks in at, and we go over everything that happened in November, from all of the WWE cuts, NXT cuts, some surprising, some not. We also talk about AEW, a brand new world champion, Hangman Page, picking up the victory over Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega going on the sidelines due to injury. Bryan Danielson next up in line for Hangman Page, we thought, and all so much more. We have stuff from all over the map, so without further ado, let's share some time together, shall we? Myself, Andrew Thompson of PostWrestling.com. Talking November 2021 in the world of pro wrestling. Well, I couldn't do a year in review series without having someone from one of my favorite websites out there. And while John Pollock has been a guest on this very show before, we have a new guest, someone I've been interested in talking to for quite some time. Andrew Thompson of Post Wrestling does a lot of great stuff for them on the website writing. He does a ton of stuff on YouTube and all kinds of other stuff as well. Andrew, welcome. Glad to talk to you for the very first time.
Josh, I appreciate you having me on, man. I'm excited about this. When you first contacted me about it, it's a very exciting concept that you got going on doing like the month-by-month breakdown of the year that was 2021, the eventful year of 2021, to say the least.
Yeah. It's been, we're going through this series. There's a lot of stuff that happened. So much stuff that we just forget about, you know, and because there's all kind of, you know, the big results or the big moves or things like that. But there's always like little things that kind of make up this this fabric of the year. So I'm glad you're able to be part of it. So for those that may not be familiar with work, or maybe they've seen your name, I'm sure they have, or so on. Tell everybody a little bit of some of the things that you do for Post. Like I said, you do a great YouTube series where you interview a lot of, you know, wrestlers and so on. But tell people a little bit more about you and how you get in the game and what you do for Post.
So just to give everybody like a timeline, I guess I started writing about wrestling about January 2017, and it was a website called eWrestling.news, not the eWrestlingNews.com, but eWrestling.news, and they sort of gave me a chance to just write features and like with no prior experience, and you know, that's kind of how I got my start, just building up a portfolio of written work to present to another website, and then that's when it just kept going from there, and then I eventually landed at Laws of Pain, which is now known as Wrestling Headlines, and then I started working for Fightful, and now I'm at Post Wrestling. And at Post, you know, I do a variety of things. You know, I write, do interviews, put the written interviews up on the site, do a couple podcasts here and there. I have the Bushby and Thompson Wrestling Adventure podcast that I host with my co-host Martin Bushby. I'm also a part of the Nubian Wrestling Advocates podcast over at Post Wrestling with Nate Milton and Chris Ely. So, yeah, a variety of things, man. And it's a very fun team to be a part of. A lot of great things going on at Post Wrestling. And, yeah, man, it's exciting. It's been a nice couple years, man, and just to see the growth of, you know, wrestling media as a whole, and to see how many different people at different sites are doing so many cool things, it's really cool to see.
Yeah, and one of the things that you do really well is YouTube, and that's something that I don't do, and I think it's just a thing that this group like yourself and so many others, and Denise Alcedo, who does some stuff for us, and so many others have just really adapted to so well. And it's really good, especially with the interviews and things like that. You have a great style. And yeah, it's the YouTube. I said, feel so old saying this. It's the way that it is now, that people, you have to have like an on-camera presence. And so many people, that's what amazes me. So many people are like naturally gifted on camera. It takes a while to kind of adjust and do all that, but once you do it for the first few times, it's like you're off and running, you know. So great job at that.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate you saying that. I remember this had to be like 2018 when I first tried to get into interviewing. I didn't have a microphone, so I would like record it off of my computer. Yeah. And I would say the first person that like really sort of gave me that boost of confidence was Desmond Xavier, who's now known in WWE as Wesley. And he, like, we had recorded something, and the audio was terrible on my part because I didn't have a microphone. It was just terrible. So I remember I emailed him, and he, like, responded to, like, every single question I had that I asked him during the interview, like, in full length response. And then, like, that sort of, like, gave me, like, just a little bit of, I don't know what it was. It just gave me, like, this extra boost of confidence, like, in a certain way to, like, want to improve at it. And then, like, I still don't think to this day that he knows, like, how much he helped me in that situation. But yeah, from there, things just kind of just took off, so to speak. So it's definitely been quite the journey, man. And I'm excited for 2022 and what's to come.
Yeah, same here. So let's look back at November, and we'll start with WWE this time around. And the thing is, kind of, I guess the biggest news of the month, obviously, there was Survivor Series, and we'll get to kind of the non-Rock Survivor Series in a minute, but this was another, like, another month of cuts. And throughout this whole series I've been doing, every month, almost every other month, it seems that there's been another big round of cuts. And this was another big one. And they did them in two different batches, which was kind of interesting. We'll kind of go through the names and kind of get your thoughts on, you know, what your feeling was when you heard some of these names after the fact. But main roster cuts included Keith Lee, Mia Yim, Nia Jax, Karrion Kross, Ava Marie, Lindsay Dorado, Graham Metalik, Harry Smith, and B-Fab. And then from NXT, Scarlett, Ember Moon, Frankie Monet, Jesse Kamea, Katrina Cortez, Jeet Rama, Oney Lorcan, Trey Baxter, and Zeta Ramir. And then just 2 weeks later, and this was surprising, that given the dates and the names included, John Morrison, Top Dollar, Ashante Adonis, Isaiah Scott, Tegan Nox, Drake Maverick, Shane Thorne, and Jackson Riker. And there was, we'll kind of get to some of the fallout after this, but again, the fact they were 2 weeks apart was surprising. The fact that they cut all of Hit Row, I was really surprised about, because they just called them up, and they had something, and they were kind of like, okay, we're moving on. Keith Lee, talented guy, but you could just see from the start that WWE just didn't really, once you get to the main roster, they just didn't know what to do with him. Nia Jax, I was surprised about. We'll talk about that in a minute. Of course, you know, Harry Smith, Dave Boy Smith Jr. had one match after he got signed, a dark match, never was seen again. But there was a lot of talent on this list. But yeah, what were your thoughts when you first heard about these cuts?
Yeah, man, they released a total of 26 people during the month of November.
Yeah,
like it was crazy, man. I think the one that immediately, of course, stuck out to me was Keith Lee, because I think we all can agree that when the thing that made Keith Lee so popular was just him being himself. Like, I think that's the thing that really garnered him, like, the popularity that he has obtained, even pre-WWE. It was just him being himself, the natural charisma. Obviously, the wrestling ability was always there. And it's like when he got to the main roster, as many talents do, as most talents do, it's like they sort of strip away the one thing or the few things that made that talent special in the first place, or made people really really attracted to said talent from a wrestling perspective. And like you can even look at two people like Karrion Kross and Scarlett Bordeaux. Like if there was two talents or an act that I thought would sort of transition seamlessly to the main roster, like without any hindrance or anything like that, I probably would have been there, because I just felt that they fit sort of that main roster type style that they look for, you know, with the glitz and the glamour and the camera and all that stuff, the special entrance. Like, it's more like their sort of act leans more to the entertainment side. So I thought that's like they would transition nicely. But, you know, that went left as soon as he got called up to the main, and they had him lose to Jeff Hardy as the NXT champion. What was that, like 3 weeks before he was supposed to face Samoa Joe for the NXT title?
Yep.
Yeah. And then with Hit Row, like I was really optimistic about Hit Row. Like whenever there's a talent that's coming up to the main roster, I always have that thought in the back of my mind that it's going to go left, like, because it just never fails. And then when Hit Row, I was really optimistic, because I thought that with them being as talented as they are on the microphone, and I thought that Isaiah Swerve Scott could really lead the pack for the in-ring stuff, because he is a great wrestler. And I just felt like with all four of them being as talented as they were in the microphone and the charisma, I felt like they would be able to overcome the bad booking that I thought was going to come their way, and they would just really shine and take it as far as they take it. But like to see all four of them gone, it is like just a big miss on WWE's part. But like the thing why I like Hero so much is because like it's rare when you have a hip hop related act on TV and it's not like super corny or like you know what I'm saying? And it, like oh, it's like some like white dude like trying to like say certain words in a way that he thinks like somebody that's rapping or somebody in hip hop would say those words and like, you know, doing the emphasis on the yo-yo and like all that corny stuff. Like hip hop, like Hit Row just felt very authentic and they felt like just four cool people. Like just very, very, I would say like a on point representation of what it means to be like something hip hop related in wrestling in the black community. Like I felt like that was just a very, very solid presentation that they had, and I felt like they really put the pieces together while they were in NXT, and I genuinely was optimistic about them. But as the same song has gone for, you know, a couple of years now, like it's always that, you know, that disconnect between the main roster and NXT.
Yeah, with Hit Row, you hit it on the head with the authentic part. They felt real, and they also, I was surprised too, because they the WWE leaned into the hip hop culture a little bit more with the, I can't remember the name of the festival that they did the SmackDown matches at.
Rolling Loud.
Yeah. And I thought, it just seemed like, you know, with Nick Khan there, that he kind of understood, like he wanted to reach this audience that WWE really hadn't been open to it, to your point, being so kind of just corny with it and just not really understanding. And it just felt like this was going to be kind of that gateway to it. They may have got called up, I think, a little too early, just, you know, kind of work and stuff. I mean, yeah. Isaiah Scott was obviously ready, but, you know, the rest of the group maybe push him just a little bit too quick, but, you know, sometimes that happens. But on the microphone, I mean, they were main roster ready, and they just had they brought an element that hadn't been WWE in the system in like quite some time. And I thought the Rolling Loud, I thought that'd be, you know, to me, I'm like, that is kind of what they're thinking is, how do we get to more of these festivals? How do we reach these younger fans that may not really into WWE, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're cut. And the, you know, surprising thing about this, or one of them, was B-Fab had just been signed to a contract extension or a new contract like the week before, and then she was cut, which is strange. Nia Jax, there was a whole thing about vaccination status with this whole group that may have been a factor. Some of the talents, Nia Jax issued a statement saying that, you know, that was never brought up to her, but that basically that, you know, she was taking some time off for mental health and asked to have an extension, didn't hear back. And the next thing she heard was that she was cut. Later she said she was, you know, basically likely done with her in-ring career. And yeah, and there was a story that came out that they were planning a third repackaging for Karrion Kross. And you were just talking about the Karrion Kross Scarlett thing. And they just did an interview with Renee Paquette this past week.
Yeah.
And essentially there was really no interest in having them as a unit. They were like immediately going to be split up. They want Scarlett to be a wrestler. And yeah, to your point earlier, this seemed to be a perfect like main roster package of them together. It's got kind of that, you know, hard metal edge, talking about music that Vince seems to like, kind of that same, like, you know, 2003 era, whatever you want to call it. But they just felt like this is going to hit, and it just didn't. And yeah, this is just strange. This is kind of just encompassed all of WWE's bizarreness with how they view how they view those NXT talents, to your point, and just not fully grasping kind of what younger fans might want. And just this is a weird series of cuts, but this was kind of symbolic of WWE's year of cuts and not really getting it.
Yeah, I definitely think you hit the nail on the head. It's definitely a symbolic of them. Like, so I'm gonna touch on your point that you made about the Rolling Loud thing. See, the reason I think that was a big miss, most and not on the exposure part, because I never think that for the Rolling Loud, I don't think them being there was bad for was bad exposure. But I think that's a good thing for them to sort of get in front of a different type of audience. But see, the reason why it was a miss, because most of those people that was there do not know who these newer talents are, and not saying they're new to us, but more so new to, like, they don't know who a Carmella is or the Street Profits are. Like they're seeing them for the first time. Like, now, I think it would have been better if they would have threw, like, you know, if they would have had like a Jeff Hardy there, you know what I'm saying? Like, people know Jeff Hardy. You know what I'm saying? Everybody knows Jeff Hardy. I don't care who, like, you, it's people who legitimately, like, I have friends who legitimately do not watch wrestling at all, but they sort of keep up with it through social media. They are very well aware of, like, the Jeff Hardys, the John Cena's of the world. You know, they know those type of wrestlers from their childhood. So I think it would have been better for this first go around to have a Jeff Hardy there, or have, you know, one of these names like a Randy Orton, who people are very familiar with. And then that's how you can sort of mix in some of the stars of today with those talents that Rolling Loud audience may have been familiar with, and maybe it would have been a better response reaction wise. And with Karrion Kross and Scarlett, like they had said in the interview, Killer Kross had said that he had went and talked to one of the NXT producers, I believe, or NXT agents, or he has went to speak to somebody in NXT, and he was just like, he felt that a grave was being dug for him, like, already, and he could sort of see the writing on the wall. And that person had told him, like, no, man, don't worry about it. Everybody here loves you. You know, everything's going to be all fine. And he felt like it was like writing on the wall at this point. And even I feel like he could have, like, you could have saw that when he said that when he was supposed to face Jeff Hardy, the story's out now, that he was supposed to, that match was supposed to be 10 minutes. And then when he got to the ring, the referee informed him that the match had been cut down to 90 seconds. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure we all remember that that visual when Jeff Hardy brought back the No More Words thing. They cut the Cross and he was laughing. And he said that he was laughing because he had literally just found out in that moment that his match got cut. And his match got cut down. And it was just one of those because when I first saw that, I thought that he was, like, playing up, like, the character aspect of, like, the crowd reacting to Jeff Hardy bringing the No More Words thing back. But it's sort of funny to hear that he had literally just found out that his match got cut down to 90 seconds while he was NXT champion. So, yeah, I definitely think you hit the nail on the head. Like, this round of cuts, and even just looking at the cuts overall in 2021, is just very, very indicative of WWE's sort of mindset and where they're going in the future. Josh, I wanted to ask you, like, what do you see the WWE product looking like in, like, 2023? Like, because, I mean, like, even just looking at the – I'm pretty sure you've seen some of the names and some of the people that they're bringing into the PC now. Like, a lot of these people, man, they don't have prior wrestling experience. Like, it seems like WWE is very much focused on taking talents and wanting to mold them into what they feel they should be. And even with I even feel like it's gonna be like that with certain independent talents, like maybe the younger talents on the independent scene right now. Like, WWE is gonna try to get them and mold them into what they want. Like, how do you kind of see the WWE product looking in 2023?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be. I think you're gonna see it a lot similar to what we're gonna see on day one. I think they kind of have their. They have their group that they're gonna move ahead with, and at this point, I'm never surprised at cuts. Especially right, after right. This year, you know, you look at some of these names and you're like, you're surprised by who they're cut. But, you know, I think it's going to be Roman Reigns. I think it's going to be, you're still going to have Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, Big E. I think that they've kind of got behind, but really need to get, my hope for them, like, in 2022 is they get behind Big E like they did Roman Reigns, like the real push, and to build something, pretty big with him. To me, it's like there's so much focus on Brock Lesnar and all this stuff. Like, the focus needs to be, you got to make Big E like the man, and Roman Reigns the man. You can have two of them, and to make some, try to build to something where you could do everyone wants to say the Rock versus Austin thing, but it's okay to have more than one big star. And I think you definitely have that with Big E. He's got it. It's just, you know, it took him almost a decade to figure it out with him, but, you know, they got it. But I think you're going to see a lot of the guys that are still, and girls that are there now. Bron Breakker, I think, is going to be a big factor in 2023 for sure. I think he's going to be, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the Royal Rumble. I wouldn't be surprised to see him called up by WrestleMania, just because Vince seems to get impatient. And, you know, I think that's one thing with this NXT 2.0 relaunch is they're going to make, since they're building these people now in NXT, that's kind of like their baby instead of Triple H's, they're going to give them every possible shot at making it on the big roster. So I think I think they're not going to be able to resist and have Breakker up by, I think maybe like the night after WrestleMania type thing.
Man, you yeah. Not to cut you off, my bad, but like I was going to add, like, I think you made like a really good point, like an interesting talking point that I think a lot of people are going to be talking about. Like even now, like we're seeing AJ Styles like interacting with Grayson Waller. Like,
right.
I'm pretty sure plenty of people would have loved to see AJ Styles in NXT back in 2019, 2018 when NXT was hot. Like, mm-hmm. But now they're like, they're like in a legit, I mean, I don't want to call it a feud, but like they're in like a storyline. Like yeah. They're popping up on each other's shows. Grayson Waller just randomly showing up on Raw. Like, I'm pretty sure people would have loved to see these sort of interactions a couple years ago. But now that it's under this new regime, this new branding of NXT, and you have these new crop of talents, it's like now they're going in with the full force of like mixing both brands. Like, you got Riddle and Walter popping up to compete on NXT next week at the New Year's Eve show. So it's now that this isn't like, you know, quote unquote Triple H's original design of NXT, it seems like things are more connected between the main roster and NXT, if I'm right in saying that.
I think so. To answer your question, I think 2023 is going to depend a lot on how the fans take to what they're seeing in the main roster in 2022. Because at some point, as much as, you know, they want to have the attention away from the in-ring is why people watch it, right? That's the culmination of all this stuff outside is what we see inside. And if you call some of these people up too soon and they're not ready, say they can't resist with like a Grayson Waller, and they're just like, okay, we really want to call him up. And he gets called up one of those random, like, mid-February, we're going to call him up that day for SmackDown or something like that. And if he's no good in there, people aren't buying it. You know, at some point you can only have so many of those people on the roster where they're like, okay, this isn't that good. We're expecting this and you're giving us this. And I think how they get to 2023 and what they look like is going to depend a lot on how those talents come along in 2022. I have no, I think Breaker is going to be fine. Just how he's adapted so well, you know, we're so inclined to be like, kind of talk about how WWE developmental is now, but he's got it. I mean, he just, for a kid that young and that inexperienced to really just have the talent there, I think he's a no-brainer. Carmelo Hayes, I've been on Carmelo Hayes, people listen to this, for 2+ years because I saw him in my local indie. He's been on the show before, Christian Casanova. He is truly, he called himself top talent in indies. He is a top talent. And I hope they give him the shot. I hope they kind of break out of their mold of, because he's not, you know, 6'8" or something like that. But he's got it. And I think, you know, I think he's going to be in NXT for a while, but I think he gets his main roster shot and they let him go, which, you know, who knows if they ever will. I think he's got it. He's got the capabilities. But again, some of these other younger guys that and girls that aren't ready but may look pretty on camera, if they can resist the temptation of bringing them up too soon, I guess we'll see what happens. But how they get to 2023 is going to depend on really how these call-ups they do in 2022 work, and if people are kind of like, this in-ring isn't good anymore, and they just kind of go away, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Like with Bron Breakker, I definitely think he is primed in 2022 for a eventual main roster call-up. I definitely think that's going to happen. And he's, you think he's going to win the title from Ciampa at New Year's Eve, or you think that's more than likely going to happen?
I would not be surprised. I was surprised. We're talking about this for October. I was surprised he didn't win at Halloween Havoc. And then, but I think, yeah, I can see them winning and having him hold the title through like Mania, and whatever event that whatever they're going to call that takeover that weekend, assuming they do one, which I'm pretty sure they probably will. I think he loses the title to somebody, another young guy then. And then, he gets called up that next night on Raw or for SmackDown. I can just, given their pattern in the past, I can see them doing that. Give him a strong 4-month run saying, all right, kid, you're ready.
Yeah, I'm about to add, like with Carmelo Hayes, with him too as well, along with Bron Breakker, I think that they are sort of I think they are the front runners, for lack of a better term, as far as breakout talents in NXT 2.0. I feel like they're going to be like sort of the top two guys in the men's division. Yep. That's going to sort of lead NXT 2.0 until one of them or both of them eventually get the call up. But like it's crazy, man, because I think like with this system, I feel like now the transition to a Raw or SmackDown might be much easier for them. Like, I don't know why, but I feel like they're going to make more of an effort to try to make sure that these talents currently in NXT 2.0, like, things are just going to be that, like, try to make things as smooth as possible for them. Like, even with Bron Breakker, like, he just worked the overseas tour a couple months back, like, right, with Ciampa. So, yeah, man, like, it's a weird thing in the sense of, like where was this, like, collaboration at? Like, when people wanted it, but now it's not there. So, yeah. It's WWE, man.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's go over this first chunk of other stuff here. I'll get your thoughts on any of this. WWE celebrated Rock Month all through November, celebrating his 25th anniversary of his first appearance for WWE. It was learned he was originally planned for a Survivor Series appearance, and that, of course, did not happen. Survivor Series teams were revealed on social media on a Sunday for the very first time. That was kind of a head-scratcher there, but that's how they do it. At Survivor Series in Brooklyn, New York, Becky Lynch defeated Charlotte to retain her title. Bit of a grudge match there. There was this whole build, of course, building off the awkward trading of the belts they had. Ric Flair, of course, got involved on social, and Becky Lynch called those comments sad. Charlotte did an interview where she really didn't say much and said she felt like she was the only adult in the room. That was the only kind of notable quote from what she said. Also at the show, we're talking about Big E and Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns defeating Big E at the event. There was no Rock, of course, even though they had videos all night and everyone was kind of thinking that it might happen as a surprise. There was no Rock at the big event, not even a video from him, which was just very surprising. Randy Orton set the record for the most pay-per-view matches in WWE. So that was Survivor Series. The Miz, later in the month, was eliminated from Dancing with the Stars. AJ Styles went missing due to a quote-unquote non-injury medical issue. It's weird, you know, gone for 2 weeks and just suddenly just reappears for something that he could have just said it was COVID, but apparently that's a dirty word in WWE. It was learned that Speedball Mike Bailey, who was originally supposed to be in WWE and then signed with Impact Wrestling, people kind of wondering what happened there, and he said that they decided to went in a different direction even after he had accepted the offer. So really kind of no big surprise there, given the cuts. Michael Cole revealed on the Pat McAfee show that he has 65% hearing loss. Frank Riddick replaced Christina Salen as the chief financial officer. That came out just, I believe, 1 or 2 days after they had the financial call. And we should mention the cuts came the first round that day, or the day after the financial call as well. Kind of some strange timing there. WWE announced that your Superstar Gaming YouTube series was coming back. And speaking of video games and YouTube, there was a story that came out that Up, Up, Down, Down creators were holding out, and that Xavier Woods was actually not paid extra from any Up, Up, Down, Down stuff, and that creators were holding out because he wasn't getting paid extra. And it was learned that income from both the gaming channel and, this is really the shitty thing, his upcoming G4 hosting duties counted against his WWE contract's downside guarantee. Which it just, I think if you take that to any agent in like Hollywood or something, they're like, this is what are we, like, how can this even count? Like it's almost like if like a movie star is doing a film and then they do a commercial and they say, okay, your commercial money counts against the money we're going to pay you for the movie. It doesn't make any sense, but this is WWE, right? Ruthless Aggression returning for season 2, and then out of nowhere, Beth Phoenix released an album. Thoughts about any of that?
So that's, I know. You know, it's funny, like, but most of that stuff probably happened in like a 2 week time span. It's crazy how much stuff happens, man, in wrestling. I swear we might have one of the busiest news cycles out of most genres. Like it's crazy. But with the Rock Survivor Series stuff, I felt like that took so much wind out of the Big E Roman Reigns main event. Like, especially considering that, you know, the news had broke, I think, like an hour or two prior to Survivor Series starting, that it was supposed to be Big E and Roman kicking off the show, and then it got switched to the main event. So when people read that and they hear that, the automatic assumption is, oh, somebody must be showing up at the end of this. Or, like, I'm going to say that was my assumption, that I thought that somebody was going to show up at the end. And the way that they were promoting The Rock throughout the night, even in the weeks leading up to it, one would think, and you know, his big anniversary, one would think that he would be showing up at this show. Now, The Rock was filming in Australia, I believe, for Young Rock, where he was there directing or doing something there with Young Rock. But like the fact that they sort of had people like even let the assumption be there that he was going to, you know, show up. And I mean, that's fair play to them on the promotion side, but I don't think it did Big E or Roman Reigns any favor, because I felt like even the final stretch of that match, people were just like kind of waiting for it to be over. Like, okay, when is this ending? When are we going to see The Rock? And then he never showed up. And then it was like, oh, that's it. Like, that's, you know, that's just it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. With Big E and Roman, man, like, I definitely think that, you know, that whole Rock situation, like them constantly promoting them throughout the night and, you know, them doing the missing egg and stuff like that. And like, I think people were sort of jumping to their own conclusions as far as like how that was going to end. Like, a lot of people thought he was going to like show up at like the end of the night and try to like collect the egg or something like that. So yeah, man, I think that was just like a misfire on WWE's part. And then with Speedball Mike Bailey, I am very glad that he didn't go to WWE from a fan's perspective, because I don't think that he would have fit at all. Like, I'm pretty sure he, you know, being a WWE has its benefits on a financial front, but I definitely don't think that he would have fit the mold of what they were looking for. Maybe he could have fit in NXT 2.0. Maybe. I mean, I think that's just something that remains to be seen. But as far as him being on that main roster product, I couldn't see it. Like, I think at most they probably would have had him running around chasing a 24/7 title. So I'm definitely glad that he opted to go to Impact Wrestling whenever he gets started there. I think he's going to have a really solid run in Impact. Definitely probably be X Division champion at some point. So yeah, I think that was the, I think things eventually, like when we look at it, whenever you know, Mike Bailey's like 5 months into his Impact run, I definitely think we'll look back you know, with the hindsight and be like, yeah, that was the things worked out for the best.
Well, if there's a rest of the chunk of the month, there's even more WWE stuff. Undertaker revealed he was having multiple surgeries and had no plans to return to the ring. Von Wagner, talking about call-ups in a sense, made his on-screen debut on SmackDown. There was this Keith Lee medical bill drama about him saying that he had to pay for some of his bills, and WWE saying that was actually not the case with some of the COVID-related issues and heart-related issues and all that. So there's a little drama there that built online. WWE said they were going to resume their plans to move to their brand new office building in late 2022. The 2K22 video game is going to revive the My GM mode, which was really popular with people. They really seemed to like that, as well as a new gameplay engine. Tiffany Stratton and Idris Enofi debuted on 205 Live. Vince McMahon apologized to Zelina Vega for the not being on the September 11th show and having her match cut, despite the fact she, you know, her father died in 9/11 and she had special gear made up, and she revealed and was kind of like, oh, it's cool, it happens. And it was kind of a weird thing there, but she said that Vince McMahon apologized to her. Sky Tuhati, a name I completely forgot was at the Performance Center as a trainer, requested his release. Seth Rollins, I forgot about this, was attacked during Raw by a fan that jumped the rail. That was kind of a scary moment, obviously. And I just read, apparently he was seen at the Madison Square Garden show as well. So he's supposed to be banned, but from all events or what have you, but kind of terrible that he's, you know, still going to shows and things like that. But I don't know how you actually prevent that. J Sports announced they were going to be no longer carrying WWE in Japan. Rumble, this WWE Paramount movie that had been pushed off a couple times, animated film, debuted on Paramount Plus. And then Day One, which is happening tomorrow as we record this, begin to take shape with initially just a one-on-one match for the world title and then kind of adding on guys after that. Thoughts on any of that?
So I did want to mention and talk about the Keith Lee medical bill situation. But like, but before we get to that, something that slipped my mind and I wanted to make sure to talk about this was when you talked about the up, up, down, down.
Yeah.
Creators holding out. Like that was, I think that was a major show of solidarity right there. I remember when I read that report, I think it came from Sean Rossap of Fightful Select.
Yeah.
I think they reported that. And like when I read that, I was like, that's a strong show of solidarity right there between friends to hold out on this project. So because I mean, we all know that WWE, like we all know that WWE has ownership of the up, up, down, down brand. But Xavier Woods is like the face of that. Like he legitimately built that thing mm-hmm. from the ground up and has assembled a team of people who he thinks would fit well. And, you know, they sort of branched off and did the left, right thing as well. Like he added that sector of it too. So like, I felt like him not receiving the proper payment that he deserves for helping build that channel to what it is. I feel like that's a slight, man. It really is. It's a real slight on him. And I know what was it? New Day, they signed contract extensions together in 2019, right? Mm-hmm. I think that was, they signed contract extensions together in 2019. But yeah, Matt, for what Xavier Woods has done for them on the gaming front and introducing WWE to a different audience as far as in the gaming spectrum, like I feel like for them to not properly compensate him for his contributions to up down, that's just petty. Like it is just not a good look, and I think that by his colleagues being like, well nothing's gonna get uploaded to this channel until things get sorted out with him, that says a lot about the people that he has around him. And I was very, very glad to hear that they stuck by him and through the situation. And I know they just did a live stream on the Up Down YouTube channel, so I'm assuming that things have improved, or the discussions have been held about how things can improve. So that's good to see, and I'm glad to see that. But with the Keith Lee medical bill situation, Josh, I'm curious to hear your take about it, because like we never hear, but it's very rare when we see WWE like just outright come out and address certain stuff. And for them to like just come out and just be like, well, this didn't happen. Like it was very interesting to see them jump out there and try to shut this down immediately. Cause it feels like with certain stuff, they want to make sure that they don't have that cloud over them. Like when it comes to either medical or something mental health related or anything that would be like anything that maybe an investor or somebody who's looking into the company from the outside, maybe like a very like mainstream outlet is looking into it. It's something that could draw them that type of negative attention. It's like, no, that didn't happen. Like they're coming out and trying to shutting that down immediately. And I think that's probably going to be one of the more interesting topics to hear when Keith Lee does his first post WWE interview. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be that he'll probably do a deep dive into. I'm hoping to hear that, because he, outright said that, he paid his medical bills, and WWE was like, well, no, you didn't. No, we helped you with that. And it sort of reminds me of the situation with Mike and Maria Kanellis Bennett, when like, it was sort of made out to be that WWE took care of him for his rehab. And Maria was like, no, that was all me. I did that. I took care of that. And, it's a very interesting situation, and I think that's going to be one that a lot of people are going to have their eyes on. When Keith Lee eventually starts talking to the media and to the press about his time at WWE.
It doesn't surprise me to get ahead of it, because I think when it comes to anything medical related in terms of like not paying bills, there's definitely a perception from some people that they do not want to get a negative perception, and I think that is the clear line. And to your point, you made a great one that there's certain things that ring their bell that they're going to talk about, and other things that don't. Yeah, they're quiet about talents being not on house shows due to COVID, because in their world, COVID doesn't exist, right? Or if it does, you don't admit to it, right? Even though it's like it's fine if people have it. It doesn't mean your wrestlers are weak. It just means they're human beings. Like that's just look at the world, right? But there are little things that really check that box for them of like, we have to say something about this because of X, for whatever reason. So yeah, that didn't surprise me. And yeah, I'm very interested into hearing what his post WWE podcast will be. I assume it'll be with like a Renee Patcat or a Jericho or someone like that. It should be with you, Andrew Thompson. I think that'd be a great interview for you two. But, I am interested to see what he and Mia have to say, because it's interesting, these couples, it hasn't been a great year for couples in WWE in terms of staying employed. You have Morrison and Frankie Monet, Ty of Valkyrie. You had Keith Lee and Mia Yim and Karrion Kross and Scarlett all cut. Kind of weird how that, the irony of that, right? Coincidence, rather.
Yeah, definitely. Like with Mia Yim, like I'm pretty sure people remember when Keith Lee addressed his health issue not too long ago, and he was very candid and said some things like, you know, he was like, it could have been, you know, a very, very bad situation, like to the point where he thought that, you know, he might not be here. Like, it was like to that point.
Yeah.
And like what he said, that Mia Yim, she had the opportunity to be in the 2021 Women's Royal Rumble. I believe she had the opportunity to be in the Royal Rumble, and she skipped that because she stayed to take care of Keith. Mm-hmm. Like, cause he was sick. So I think that, you know, that was a nice thing to hear on Mia's part. Definitely not nice to hear about, you know, what Keith was going through. But even just from a storyline perspective, like when I'm talking about as far as how they presented Keith Lee when he came back, you know, he lost in his hometown his first night back on Raw. And like, I think something just as simple as, and I know some people really aren't fans of using sort of real life stuff in, you know, in pro wrestling, but I felt like it could have been very endearing to the crowd to just air his video that he put out on YouTube. Like, just put out the full 4 minute, 5 minute video that he put out where he addressed everything, where he's been, what he's been through, how rough the situation was. And I felt like that was just a natural, that could have been just a natural way to just get people behind him immediately.
Yep.
Like, cause that was a real genuine, like, that was him just speaking from his heart, letting you know what he was going through, how rough it was, how bad it could have gotten. And, you know, in his message, he thanked WWE Medical for recognizing the issue that he had. And, you know, he said it hadn't that been for them, he doesn't know where things could have went. I felt like that could have been like just a nice way to introduce Keith Lee on the television. Be like, he went through all this, he made it back, and now he's, you know, he's here to go. Like, it's like certain stuff, like, and I don't know, it's way deeper than, you know, a storyline thing, but I'm just speaking from, like,
yep,
that could have just been like a very easy reintroduction to the people that haven't seen Keith Lee in such a long time, because he had been gone since like February, you know what I mean? So yeah, that WWE, they are very very weird, very hit and miss with a lot of stuff. But yeah, like you said, it'll be very, 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 very intriguing. And I definitely will have my eyes glued whenever Keith Lee does his first post WWE interview.
Yep. Let's flip to AEW. We'll run through their month, which was highlighted by Full Gear. Did about 145,000, 150,000 buys on pay-per-view, which is a really good number for them, about $4 million in revenue at least. This was culminated, obviously, with Hangman Page winning the AEW world title, defeating Kenny Omega. And this was a storyline that had gone back, well over a year. The two were their tag team. Yeah. There was a whole split up. Page was originally tabbed. They thought we're going to have this match it all out. He and his wife were pregnant with their first child. It's going to be due in September. So there was the whole 10-man tag match. We thought, okay, he's going to earn the world title shot then. And then that didn't happen. That was kind of a surprise. We learned later why. He comes back in a big surprise at the casino ladder match, wins the thing. And then we're off and running to this match here. The build is a great match. And yeah, Hangman Page winning the AEW world title. Jay Lethal made his debut, surprisingly, near the end of the show there, was introduced. This is obviously coming off of the ROH changes we talked about in the October edition. Told me here Ishii was announced. He was going to be making his Dynamite debut the following Wednesday. And then Bryan Danielson won the entire the world title eliminator tournament. So he was going to be apparently next in line, we thought, for Hangman Adam Page. And that would definitely be the case. Some of the follow-up from this, Eddie Kingston and Aleister Black missing an autograph session the next day due to some injuries. Apparently made with Kingston, he seemed to be fine. It was just kind of one of those weird things that was supposed to happen the next day. And then Kenny Omega got medically evaluated in the week after. We knew he was probably going to be out for quite some time, and that was confirmed. He said he was out indefinitely due to multiple surgeries, basically fixing all different parts of his body, his knee, I think his labrum, abdomen, all these different types of things. And he had a solid, great run and just needed some time off and to recover from these surgeries. We expect him probably back in, you know, February, March, seems to be. And the surgeries were bad enough, or the timetable was close enough where he had to drop the AAA mega title, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, the whole kind of Full Gear package, Andrew, was everything paid off, you know, and it's nice to see things pay off. I assume everyone thought that Hangman Page was going to win the title, And he did, and it was a fun moment. And Omega rides off into the sunset, and will probably be coming back as part of this Adam Cole, Young Bucks, Red Dragon feud that we have starting right now.
Hey, Josh, doesn't it feel like when like after Hangman won the title, didn't it feel like that was like the end of chapter one of AEW?
Yeah, almost like I don't know if you watch Marvel movies, but kind of like they had the phase one where they had like Oz characters, then they moved into phase two and so on. Yeah, it felt like, yeah, it's a good way to put it. It did feel like kind of chapter one of the AEW story was written and complete.
Yeah, and with Omega, man, like I even remember I had covered in an interview that he did with Wrestling Observer Radio. He was on Wrestling Observer Radio, and this was like November 2020 when he revealed that he had been working with a torn labrum, and this was November 2020. So the way he was speaking was that he had been dealing with this for quite some time, even before that. So for him to go into the winner this coming AEW World Title match of John Moxley, win it, and have the run that he did with the torn labrum on top of the other injury, I think that just says a lot about Kenny Omega as a talent. Like he really is a great wrestler. So like for him to be able to put on the caliber of matches that he did throughout his run with the torn labrum, like I can only imagine what he will be able to do once he's fully recovered and, you know, fully healed. I think a lot of people are looking forward to that. But when Hangman Page went in the title, it was just, it just felt like, you know, full circle moment, the right thing to do. Like you brought this dude like full circle. He was in the first AEW World Title match. He lost, built them all the way back up. He had some ups and downs in the character sense. He went from the mid card to the tag team title scene, and then eventually got his way back to the world title scene. And like I think it all worked out in the end. But now he's in a feud with Bryan Danielson. Man, I know there's like a part. I refuse to believe that there's not a part of Tony Khan that doesn't think about strapping Danielson. Like it's no way. Yeah. No way he hasn't at least thought about this at least once. Because I mean, dude, I feel like Danielson is like doing some really really great work right now. Like as a heel, like him. Well, he's not even a. He's just like more so just leaning into the reactions that the crowd are giving to him.
Yeah.
Like they are booing him right now, so he's just like heavily leaning into it. Like you see him, he still comes out of the babyface tunnel, which I think is like a little cool note about AEW. But yeah, man, that the second title match was that January 5th, the first show on TBS. I think that's something that has a lot of intrigue to it because, I mean. I don't think that they would take the title off Hangman, but I think it's more so a lot of people are curious as to the finish of the match. Like, is he going to beat him clean, or is it going to be like some type of, you know, interference or something like that? Like, so I think that's something that a lot of people are looking forward to. Like with the young, I think you mentioned the Young Bucks, or that was like listed in the listening to the conversation about AEW, listening on the topics. Would you consider them sort of the most influential tag team of this generation?
Yeah, I think in some ways they are. I think especially in the marketing end and how they basically were they kind of built themselves up as must see when they weren't really on like national TV, you know, even before all this stuff. They were having great matches and just kind of had this nice groundswell. I mean, they got into in Hot Topic, which, you know, I don't shop at Hot Topic, but you know what I mean? Like a lot of people do. I mean, it's a national chain in malls, and people are seeing their merch there. But again, before they had like, you know, I mean, they were doing ROH stuff, but this was like before, you know, they weren't on TNT or USA or something like that. I mean, I think they've really kind of paved the way of like marketing. I think so many things we take for granted right now with, you know, how people market their t-shirts and pro wrestling tees and all that. I think, they really kind of paved the way of like, we can do, this is how you do it. And you have to have the in-ring and they, you know, have done that. They've obviously, you know, laid their bodies online countless times before they even got to AEW, but ever since. And yeah, I think we were talking about this yesterday that, you know, tag team wrestling is like, they have so much talent now and they're so loaded up and they can have more talent if they want to. For the year ahead, that they could really, yeah, they could do a TV show just for tag teams if they wanted to. I don't think Bob probably would never do that, but they could have secondary belts. We talked about trios belts before, but yeah, I think the Bucks are, Yeah, the Bucks really are. Yeah, I think it's a good way of putting it. They're certainly, I think with this generation now that it's really kind of developed and come into their own, I think they have to be one of the most influential in terms of the total package for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the Bucks really are like, I think once they're done wrestling, then I think people will look at their body of work and what they've accomplished and how they did change the game. You know, from a marketing aspect, you can even loop in Colt Cabana with them, and I feel like they really changed. They really did change the game. So I think when, like, you know, when it's all said and done for them, people will look back and be like, oh yeah, they did do a lot. Like I feel like now it's like you know people have varying opinions about a lot of different talents and, you know, their contributions to the business and, you know, what they add and what they don't add. And, you know, I think that's just a subjective thing. People like what they like and people like what they don't like. But I think it would be crazy to say that the Bucks didn't have a huge influence on professional wrestling as far as a marketing standpoint and even from their in ring style.
Let's go over the rest of the list for November in AEW. Battle of the Belts officially was announced for January on TNT. Jim Ross initially thought he was not going to miss time due to radiation for skin cancer, but he ended up missing several weeks and came back this past week, and everything appears to be well there. Talking about the Young Bucks, their two-year extension was picked up. No brainer there for Tony Khan. A lot of wrestlers in the company coming clean or being open rather about their issues with mental health and so on. We had Eddie Kingston putting out a memorable Players Tribune column about his past. The Blade, Pepper Parks, admitted to dealing with depression and anxiety issues, and he was finally came back to action but was very open in dealing about that. And then John Moxley entered alcohol rehab, and that was a bit of a surprise given that it seemed to be a no-brainer that he was going to face Bryan Danielson rather in the at the Full Gear Finals. And then, yeah, just out of nowhere, I think that the same week that his book came out, entered alcohol rehab, and hopefully he's still doing well. Everything seems to be good, I think, and probably expect to see him any day now. Who knows? And then Miro replaced him in that tournament and then lost to Bryan Danielson at Full Gear. Anthony Ogogo was back to training in the United States after having eye surgery. Tony Khan said that on an interview that most of the roster was vaccinated. He later said in a media interview that he was frustrated with a lack of credit from the NWA for loaning talent to them for Empower. And I was on this call, and he said this over and over again. It was kind of interesting how he said it, and they seemed to have a good working relationship in the past, but that maybe seemed to be over unless they, kiss the feet of the king or something like that. I don't know. Aria Davari made his debut on Rampage against Dante Martin. Seems to be just a one-off for now because he has not returned since then. The Butcher tore his biceps in a match. I believe the match with Ishii on Dynamite, the tag team match there, and then has not come back to action. Road to the Top was renewed for season two, and then Big Swole in AEW decided to part ways. Thoughts about any of that, Andrew?
So to start off, like the Tony Khan media call, NWA Power comment, I think that was like a little much from Tony right there. Like I felt like I'm gonna just say like I think he got in his feelings a little bit.
Yeah.
Like and it rubbed in the wrong way. But I don't think that he should have. And the reporter that asked her that question, Ella J, I don't think that he should have responded to her in that manner or like cut her off or something like I feel like it was a much more easier response to give or even just provide a simple yes or no. Like I think she asked, like, you know, it was something along the lines of like, you know, there have been a lot of advances in, you know, women's wrestling over the past year. You know, would you ever see AEW doing like an all women show or something along that? He like cut her off and then like did this whole thing about how he you know, helped NWA with the, you know, their Empower show, and you know, he paid talent and stuff like that. I'm like, all right, Tony, you know what I'm saying? Like, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah. I'm from that perspective, not him cutting her off like that, but I'm talking about like from maybe the perspective of being wanting that credit. But I mean, at the same time, people give Tony credit all the time for what he's doing with AEW. Like, I just didn't think that was the right response. And Ella did tweet out that, you know, that Tony Khan reached out to her and they, you know, they squashed it and cleared it up. So, you know, that was good to hear. But like just from that initial thing when it first came out, I just did not think that was a good look at all. I think there was a better way to address that. But, you know, they squashed it and, you know, it seems like everything is all good. So, you know, but yeah, that definitely could have been handled better initially from the jump. And with John Moxley, for him to, and I'm Josh, I'm sure you would agree, for him to be in the position that he was in as a marquee talent in AEW, going into a big match against Danielson, and I think a lot of people were looking forward to that, and you know, seeing him being willing to take, like, just push all that to the side and be like, I need to take care of this. And he recognized a vice and he took care of it, and he's taking care of it. And you know, like you just said, I hope he's doing well. But I was gonna, like, just ask you to, like, kind of expand on a little bit, Josh. I'm pretty sure you would agree that it takes a lot for, especially in the professional wrestling field, for somebody to just remove themselves from a marquee spot like that and think about, you know, something that they got going on personally and address that, and just completely push the other thing to the side and just focus on what's important.
Yeah, I think in entertainment in general, it's hard to do that. You're basically just walking away at a time when you're ready, almost ready to go on, and to say, yeah, I need to take care of this, especially with a young child at home. And I think that had a lot to do with this. Well, I mean, yeah, it takes balls to do that, and it takes fortitude. I'm glad he did it. And good on AEW for not punishing him in any way. They're like, you know, we hope to have him back. And at some point, we have a deep roster. We can put someone else in there. Let's not worry about that, but let's take care of the person first. But yeah, considering his book came out, he was set for a high profile match, and everything was, you know, he's one of the bigger stars of the company, to take himself off the chessboard for a while, take care of, so his issues and everything is good at home and there's no problems there. Yeah, it takes a lot of balls to do that, and I'm glad he did it. Good for him.
Yeah, when he eventually does come back, that reaction is going to be insane.
Huge, people
that he's going to have, like, that star power / goodwill pop. Like, it's going to be ridiculous. But I definitely hope Mox is doing well. You know, I hope he's progressing and stuff like that. So I think that's first and foremost, before any type of return happens, I think that's mostly what people are concerned about. So I think you mentioned, you know, the mental health aspect of it with the Blade, you know, openly speaking about it. Like, I think that's one thing throughout this pandemic that has been really, I don't want to use the term good, but I think it is good for people that are in these high profile spots to, you know, to share some of their experiences to people that may feel like they don't feel like it's right, or not feel like it's right, but more so they don't feel comfortable sharing, like, some of their mental health droughts. Like, I think we all, just as human beings, you know what I'm saying, we all experience different emotions and we go through our ups and downs and our highs and our lows. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, like, something inevitable. Like, we I don't think there's any way to sort of escape that. We sort of just go through it and, you know, try our best to come out the best that we can. And I think it's been cool to, like, really see a lot of wrestlers, just wrestlers across the globe, sharing their respective experiences. Like, even with Gabriel Kidd, when he came out at the NJPW Strong Show, and, you know, he talked about how, you know, he was almost driven to that point, the furthest point, and, you know, he just felt like, you know, he was very open and candid, and, you know, he told his story, and I felt like that was just really good for a lot of people to hear. And I heard that he got a lot of good feedback from that, and, you know, a lot of people reached out to him, and, you know, people he wasn't expecting to reach out to him. So and with Eddie Kingston's Tribune article, I thought that was that was very, very well written. I think he was very candid and you know, very, very open. And I remember an interview he did. He was on Isaiah Swerve Scott's Swerve City podcast, and Eddie Kingston had shared that after his Funk match with CM Punk at Full Gear, he fell into a depression, and he was just like, it was more so of a thing of, like, he said he's never been good at accepting, like, an overwhelming amount of compliments. Like, he gets overwhelmed when stuff like that happens. Like, even after the match with Miro, like, people were like, just Eddie, and he was just like, I don't know how to, you know, I don't know what's going on, I don't know what to do, so, like, I'm just about to shut down. And, like, he felt the same way after CM Punk, and, like, it was just like, there's a lot of people that do have those, like, random waves of, like, sadness or depression. So I think that was really good to hear that from him in this position, for him to be like, I just had a really, really good match, and it was, like, really well received for the most part, and I don't feel good after it, and from a mental aspect. And there's a lot of people who have a lot of highs, and then they, you know, they sort of come down and they don't necessarily feel that same way anymore or feel that way right after. So this sort of wave of wrestlers being open about their mental health, I think is good to hear from the people that watch them, from the journalists that covered them, yeah, interview them and stuff like that. I think it's just good for all involved. And I think it further opens up the conversation to everybody to just, you know, share their respective experiences and know that there are going to be people out there that are going to reach out to you and want to see you do well. Even people that you necessarily don't even talk to, it'll be people that reach out to you and want to make sure that you're okay and stuff like that. So yeah, I think this has been one of the more positive things to come out of this whole pandemic, because, you know, a lot of people have a lot of time to themselves or had a lot of time to themselves while things were shut down and had time to, you know, think about things and reflect and stuff like that. So yeah, man. I definitely think that's been a good thing. And I think you mentioned the Butcher, Andy Williams, or I think that was listed in the rundown for AEW.
Yep.
You know, he's had like a rough go at it with the injuries.
Yep.
He had the hand injury early this year, and you know, now he's out with a pec. Just from your perspective, Josh, like, what do you sort of see, like, the ceiling for, like, Butcher and Blade as a tag team? Like, you think they're just going to be used as, like, a, you know, just a team to help get the other team over and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's so many other good teams there, and with only one set of belts. I mean, when you have Santana Ortiz kind of, like, sitting on the sidelines, in a sense, storyline-wise.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, yeah. You know, yeah. They have an embarrassment of riches. You know, who knows? If the Briscoes, what's going to happen with them? I mean, they had that angle at the end of Final Battle with FTR. Is that going to happen on AEW TV? They have so many teams there that, like, you know, the Lucha Brothers, they're kind of just coming into their, I say coming into their own, but, you know, they're having their title run, so they're kind of establishing themselves on a different level. But, yeah, I think Butcher and Blade, it's going to kind of be, it is what it is. I am Private Party, I think, has taken a big step back. They've had some injuries there. They have talent, but they haven't really got the in-ring time lately to just kind of go on their own. That's a team that needs more work. They have so many teams there that, yeah, I think they're going to be a team that's around, but I don't really think there's much of a ceiling. I think they're going to be the kind of the bruisers, the hard hitting guys. Yeah. But as far as like a tag team title run, they have so many other teams right there right now that need to get that run. Again, I keep thing about Santana Ortiz, especially they deserve a big top run, and I hope they get it in 2022. But yeah, it's kind of what I feel with Butcher and Blade.
Yeah, with Santana and Ortiz, man, I feel like so just to add on to your point about Butcher and Blade, within that same point, I feel like you do need people like that on your roster, and it's nothing wrong with that. I really right. Don't think it's nothing. Like, I think everybody on your roster can't be like this top notch, top flight superstar. Like it doesn't balance well. You need to have people who are like sort of in that mid tier of the card or positioning in the company to sort of balance things out and to be able to throw them in any situation and be like, hey, we need to get this team a win, so let's throw them in there. Like, even with I don't mean no disrespect at all to Tony Nese, but I feel like you need people like him on your roster. Like, I don't think that Tony Nese is gonna be like some breakout talent for AEW. Now, do I think that Tony Khan has plans for Tony Nese to be a big talent? Like, I mean, yeah, I just based off his track record, I don't think that he would bring somebody in just to sit him down on the sideline. But, you know, things happen and, you know, things change in AEW. And I'm pretty sure that roster is not going to look the same back come January 2022. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a lot of additions coming to the roster come February. So, like, you know, things shift around. But, like, even with a guy like Tony Nese, I feel like you need somebody like him on your roster. Like, you know, he go in there, have a great match. You could throw him in there with probably anybody from the roster, honestly. Get him on TV, get him a TV spot. And, you know, yeah, that's how you go from there. But, yeah, I think that you always need just a variety on your roster. I don't think that it's good for everybody to be, like, a top-level superstar on your roster. Like, you need to have that balance, that top level, that mid level, and then you have people slightly beneath that. So yeah, man. But with the Butcher, he has had definitely a rough go at it. And I definitely agree with you, with Santana and Ortiz. They I think they've been ready since they got the AEW. Very polished tag team. I would love to see them versus Red Dragon. I think that would be very cool. The Cena versus Bobby Fischer, Kyle O'Reilly. Man. AEW, they do have an embarrassment of riches. I think that was a nice way to put it. So yeah, but definitely with Santana on the tees, just to back to reiterate that, I definitely think they're ready.
All right, let's flip to NXT. Not a lot going on here, but a couple of interesting things. War Games was announced for December. Zoe Stark was having surgery for a torn ACL meniscus that she suffered at Halloween Havoc. Probably the bigger news of the month was that Johnny Gargano and Kyle O'Reilly, they found out that their deals were expiring in December. Obviously, Kyle O'Reilly ending up in AEW really quickly after. And we don't know what's going to happen with Johnny Gargano. They also had a SmackDown Dark match, interestingly enough, between the two of them. Vic Joseph and Mackenzie Mitchell got engaged. Tommaso Ciampa revealed that Rick Steiner was supposed to be at Halloween Havoc, but could not due to schedule issues. Bobby Stevenson, now Damon Kemp. And there were other, obviously many other name changes, as what happens pretty often in NXT. And then over in the UK, Flash Morgan Webster having surgery for a torn labrum. Yeah, not a lot there with NXT, but obviously, you know, the big news, Gargano and O'Reilly, their futures, that was a big discussion in November and also December as well.
Damon Kemp, what a name.
What a name.
What a name. Why? So they just going to act like this dude is not Gable Steve's brother. Is that what we're doing?
I'm wondering if they did that because they knew that they don't want to change Gable Stevenson's name. I can't imagine they're going to change his name. I mean, they could, right. But yeah, it was just kind of one of those things that stuck out of like, maybe it's a precursor to either his name being Kemp or yeah, at that point. Yeah. But they're just going to say that he's a different person. Yeah. It's WWE for you, right?
they just go call him Gable. That's going to be his name.
Just Gable. Steve's
just Gable. Yeah. But hold on, wait. So real quick, before we get into the NXT, I did this, that slipped my mind. I did want to briefly talk about Big Swole's exit from AEW real quick. I think that was that was definitely something. When she announced it, I was like, that's gonna turn some heads, because she's the first talent to openly like address their exit from AEW from a mutual perspective. The thing about Big Swole was like, she, I don't think she ever really found her footing in AEW. Like I did like the program that she did with Britt Baker, like the story they were telling when they were based in Daily's Place. I think that was very entertaining. And Swole, she was also dealing with Crohn's the whole time. And she's been in the Crohn's, I think, her whole life. So I'm pretty sure that's something that's not easy to deal with or combat. And I'm pretty sure it's probably testing as hell to like having to go through and stuff like that. Like I even seen like a picture of her, like she had to get like, you know, you got to get shots and stuff quite often, or check blood work and stuff like that. So I'm pretty sure that's something that's just like a hassle for her. But yeah, man, I did like I like the program she did. With Britt, I just think it was just a case of, you know, not being able to necessarily find that sort of right thing for her in AEW. And, you know, it's like you said, it was a mutual thing. They agreed that it was just best that they go their separate ways. So, I'm definitely curious to see what she'll do next in professional wrestling. I know she had launched like a podcast type thing where she, you know, she sort of spoke about, you know, her the beginning stages of her running AEW back in 2019. So definitely best of luck to Big Swole and whatever she does next. But with NXT, like I know we were joking about the Bobby Stevenson thing. Like it's sort of similar to the Bron Breakker situation. Like I know Bron said that he chose the name Bron Breakker, but I think it was more so along the lines. And actually, I heard this from on the Nubian Wrestling Advocates podcast over on Post from a friend of mine, Chris Ely. He's of the mindset that Braun didn't choose that name. They gave him a list of names and he just chose those two and put them and put them together. So like it was funny because like that really does make sense. Like there's no way that I don't think that he would have rather not have been called Bronson Rick Steiner opposed to like it ultimately ended up with Bron Breakker. But I mean it's working out for him regardless. But yeah, man, with even with the NXT UK stuff, Flash Morgan Webster, like he had the torn labrum, working with a torn labrum for 3 years, and I think him and the whole subculture group over there in NXT UK, they out of action. Mark Andrews had shoulder surgery and Danny Luna's out with ACL surgery.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely some. Yeah, NXT UK just kind of, it kind of exists in its own universe, you know. Yeah. What, real quick? Yeah. Any thoughts on when, you know, we heard about obviously Gargano and O'Reilly and their deals being up? And I guess not a big surprise that O'Reilly ended up in AEW. I think I was surprised how quickly it happened. But I guess we're just going to see what happens with Gargano. I think a lot of people expect him to go over there if they are interested. Again, more adding more to the embarrassment of riches, but. Yeah, he's having kid. Also, O'Reilly having his first child as well. And
that's cool.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's this kind of this changing the guard in NXT and that they. I think the point was made like both those guys were given offers, and they didn't sign them, and they could have, and just simply been okay. Yeah. We're gonna have the offers, sign them, and then we're gonna have our kids and come back whenever and still get paid. And we're gonna come back whenever, but. Yeah, Kyle O'Reilly clearly wanted to be a pro wrestler in addition to being a dad. And I guess we'll see what happens with Gargano. But, I mean, he's made all the moves that would indicate that he's not going back with the Twitch channel, YouTube, things like that, and making some revenue, making some money in his downtime. And I'd be surprised if he went back. But I don't know. We'll see. What do you think?
So with Gargano, like, hold on. So before we get into that, Josh, isn't it crazy like how different, like I think I'm still trying to process like how different NXT is. Think about those days, man. It's 2017, 2018, we were on the network. Dude, that was like one of the best hour programs out there when it was on. It was just so fun to watch, so quick. Everything just flew by. But to see where NXT is now, it makes it difficult to get into. But with Gargano, like, I mean, I think a part of me can see him signing back with WWE, but also a part of me can see him being like, you know, I'm good on that. I'll probably go elsewhere. I think Gargano, I think he would be a very, very, very great addition to AEW, because I think he is one of those guys that you could throw in there and he can really have pretty much a good to great match with anybody. And I think Johnny is a natural baby face. And I think one of those matches that people have kind of sort of fantasy sort of thought about for a while is him versus Danielson. And now that Danielson is a heel or is being the crowd is reacting to him like a heel, I think that dynamic between him and Gargano would only work even better, because I think Johnny Gargano is like, I know he did like, you know, he had a really good heel running the NXT. But I feel like baby face is like that's Gargano's thing. Like, he's like baby face through and through all the way. Like, I still often think about that match he had with Almas at Takeover Philly.
Yeah,
that was one of the best matches, man. I think it's one of those things that's up in the air with Gargano. I can honestly see him doing either one, but I think more so people would love to see him in AEW, because I feel like with NXT, I feel like some of the originals that were there, or some of the talent, most of the talents that were there prior to this rebrand, I don't think that they're going to be featured in a prominent role much longer. And that's saying that they're going to be gone from NXT, but more so, I just don't think that they're going to be like they aren't going to be presented in the way that they were pre this rebrand. Like, even with Io Shirai, she's not a big part of the show anymore. Like, Io Shirai is like, she's one of the best wrestlers out there. And she's just not a big part of the show anymore, because that's not the direction they're going. She's like, she's a background player, essentially. Like, she's going to be used when people, you know, when they need like a tag team partner for somebody, or they need some star power in a match, they'll bring out EO. And I think that's going to be the way that they go. You know, Pete Dunne's going to be there for the next few years. But you know what's funny? I think a lot of people think Pete Dunne is a lot older than he is. Pete Dunne's like the same age as like most of those people in NXT 2.0. But yeah, going back to Gargano, I think a lot of people want to see him in AEW, but I can also definitely see him staying with NXT, maybe even signing like a 1-year deal, you know, something along those lines, or a short term 2-year deal, something like that. And Kyle O'Reilly, I didn't think it was I thought that was a no brainer. Like, when as soon as he became a free agent, I was like, there is no way that he's not going to AEW. It's just no way. And even Tony Khan had said it in the interview with Sports Illustrated. He was like, so as soon as he found out that Kyle was about to be free agent, he was like, we're getting him. Like, you know, it was just like a no brainer type thing. Like, cause I mean, you got a chance to reunite, you know, that trio, you know, you know, they've been associated with one another for quite some time. And of course, but they, the great run that they had in NXT is Undisputed Era. It was just like, you know, it was a no brainer thing. But yeah, like, so Josh, with NXT sort of stand on that topic, like, don't you think it's kind of crazy that just from WWE, from a business perspective, that they would sort of just break down NXT like this, considering that this was once a brand that was selling out a Staples Center, selling out you know, the Barclays, and selling out the Motor City in Portland, and selling out different arenas around the U.S. for these takeover shows. Like, like, just from a business perspective, you just basically took away it. I mean, I mean, of course, coming out of the pandemic, you know, things change, but like, well, not still in the pandemic, but like, I'm just very, like, curious as to why, as a business owner, you would want to take away that live gate revenue that NXT would generate. Dude, they were literally selling out these buildings for these takeover shows.
Yeah, I think the pandemic changed a lot of things. I think they saw that there's a cost savings to be had by running out of one location with NXT. And I think that without them saying that it's a developmental, because it makes it sound minor league, that's what it is. It's developing talent for that next level. And perhaps there was, you know, internal discussions that they didn't really want to seem as a third brand, because then a true third brand, because then you have people asking, well, why aren't they drafting people like in the WWE draft? Mm. Why are they not have more of an inclusion in things like a definite inclusion, like Survivor Series and Royal Rumble and things like that? Like, if you're going to treat them as a third brand, treat them like a third brand. So I think the pandemic changed a lot of things for them. I'm sure there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that happened there and what have you. And we'll see what happens with Triple H going forward. And yeah, it just seems like it was a financial decision, but also they're like, look, we don't want to make this more than what we want it to be. And we don't want it to be considered a third brand. I think a lot of it kind of built out of that. And they're like, look, the money, while it's great, we're able to sell out the Staples and Barclays and have these fun events in the past, that's not us and that's not this anymore. And we want it to be this, and that's all it's going to be, you know, and it's kind of weird to your great points, but that's WWE.
Hey, Josh, if you were in Triple H position, would you even want to go back to NXT and try to like salvage it?
Not
salvage it, but more so just go back into that position. Like, I would feel so disheartened. I really would.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of done with that in terms of like a day to day. I think there's enough to do potentially. It all depends how Nick Khan sees him and his role as well. And obviously Vince, since he owns a company, has a lot play over that. And obviously his wife is there and it's a family business. So I'm fascinated how that story turns out in 2022 and how he begins, obviously, as he gets better from his cardiac event or whatever you want to call it.
For sure. For sure.
We'll see how, we'll see what he wants, how he rebuilds his public perception. Cause it was pretty great before AEW came around, and then everything changed and he's kind of back to this, like, almost like, I don't want to say pathetic figure, but a sympathetic, he's turned into a sympathetic figure based on what happened. And I don't know if he really wants to be that. So what does this next act look like for him? I'm really fascinated how that turns out in 2022.
Yeah, that's a good point. So as far as NXT goes, I don't see him, like you say, I don't see him going back to like a day-to-day thing. I definitely see him like checking in at points. But like, even me speaking about the situation, like if I was in that position, I would feel so, like, just disheartened about it. I'd be like, dude, what's the point? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like everything that AEW is doing is what he wanted to do with NXT eventually, was to, like, make it, like, a live touring, you know, weekly, on the road, you know, hitting these buildings. Like, and then the smart thing that AEW does is, like, they don't try to go to every big building in every city. Like, even when they come in here to DC in January, they're going to be running the event center. And it's like, you know, it seats like 8,000, 7,000 people, you know, of course that depends on the setup and stuff, but like, it's just smart. And even when they go to Boston and they go to like some of the colleges that don't, like, it's not like 20,000 seats. It's like, you know, 8,000, 10,000. Like, I think that's smart to fluctuate into not every city you go to, you don't got to hit the big buildings every time. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes the venues just look better when it's small and packed out. So, I think NXT back in 2018, 2017, 2019, what AEW is now, I think that's what AEW has been. I think that's definitely what Triple H had in vision for his product. And you mentioned Nick Khan. I know this has been like something that a lot of people have talked about and just have like sort of speculated on and discussed. Do you think that he wants to sell WWE?
I feel like
he thinks it'll look good on his resume.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. I think he's I don't know if he does. I know he is doing whatever he can to build up the anticipation of this being a huge bidding war for the next set of TV rights in what, 2022 or 23, whatever it is at this point. Yeah. And I think he wants, I mean, they're running Saturday night pay-per-views now. Some of the big events are running domes for some of the big events. I think he wants to, I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to try to spin it off at some point and sell it. But I mean, what does Vince McMahon do at that point? I think he's not going to retire. So it's a question of if they did sell it, is he going to listen to somebody for a company he essentially, I would say, built from the ground up. But as far as this iteration that he made and he took over from his dad, I can't see that happening. But I think Nick Khan's focus here for the next few years is he's remade the front office into his own image. This is exactly what he wants. This is the people he has in place for the most part, I would say. And I think he wants to turn this more to he wants to make the big events big. He wants to make them big for his media partners and his advertising partners. And I think he wants to make those things a lot bigger than they are. And I think and this is all building towards this next round of TV deals. And that's going to kind of be his crowning achievement. If they don't get a big increase, I think that's not good for him, I'd say. But if they do get a big increase, you know, he's done his job, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. But I think I don't see them selling. I think their emphasis is make the profile bigger and get the biggest, try to like get even more money out of the TV deal, which ratings and viewership and all that, that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
There you go.
Let's flip Japan again. I'm not a big Japanese wrestling watcher, so I'll run through these. And I'll kick it over to you for any thoughts. Juice Robinson's deal was learned to be expiring in January. At New Japan Power Struggle, Kenta defeated Tanahashi for the U.S. title. El Desperado defeated Robbie Eagles for the junior heavyweight title. Evil, Takahashi, and Sho won the never openweight six-man titles, ending Goto Ishii's and Yoshihashi's 454-day run as champions. Shingo Takagi defended his IWGP title against Zack Sabre Jr. in the main event, and also Toriano retained the King of Pro Wrestling belt as well. Shingo versus Okada was announced for Wrestle Kingdom 16 Night 1, with Will Ospreay getting the winner on Night 2 to try to bring that whole three champion storyline together, so to speak. World Tag League and the Best of Super Juniors tourney's fields were revealed, and Naito was revealed as returning for the World Tag League after recovering from his knee injury. At the Battle in the Valley show here in the United States, Ishii won the NEVER title from Jay White. Chris Dickinson dislocated his leg out of the rear of his hip socket and was out for 6 months. Definitely a bad injury, bad timing for him. Jonah made his debut, the former Bronson Reed, to confront Moose and also take out Finn Juice. And then Okada defeated Buddy Matthews, and Will Ospreay defeated Ren Narita on that show. Three U.S. dates were announced for the first 3 months of 2022. New Japan announced their 50th anniversary tour and also a museum of sorts that would be a part of that celebration of their 50th anniversary. Jay White versus Chris Daniels, Jonah, and Eddie Kingston were announced as being at making appearances or wrestling at New Japan's Nemesis TV tapings. Kenta announced as returning to NOAH for a January 1st show. And then the New Beginning USA show was announced for January in Seattle. Thoughts about any of that, Andrew?
Yeah, so with the Juice Robinson points contract expiring at the end of January, he'll be a free agent in February. I think both Juice and David Finley are better suited for the American television style of wrestling. I feel like that's what they like doing. Like, I've even heard David Finley and Juice, honestly, doing interviews about how like they just feel like it just fits them, like because they've been doing the work with Impact, and they just feel like it's just more their thing. And the first, I remember Fit Finley had did an interview, and he sort of spoke about but he did speak about like how David was sort of weighing his decision about whether he wanted to stay with New Japan or not. And this was like in, this had to be like in May or June or right before the summer. He was just speaking about how David wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do, because, you know, of course, the pandemic's in the play, and, you know, the travel and, you know, all that stuff. And he just really sort of comfortable in Impact, and maybe, you know, just of the mindset of like, you know, maybe I want to stay in the U.S. and, you know, just do my thing here. Or maybe it's a situation of like both guys will just continue working for New Japan Strong. They could probably, you know, re-sign with NJPW and then just, you know, work primarily in the U.S. as a part of their global expansion. But Juice, I'm interested to kind of see what kind of market is out there for Juice as far as like who would be interested in him on a full time basis. Like, I can't see Juice going back to WWE, or maybe he could go back to WWE. I mean, you never really know. I think Impact is like probably a good call. Maybe he signs a deal with them. I'm always curious to see how like those type of relationships work. Like, as Impact and New Japan have relationships, so Juice becomes a free agent from New Japan and then goes signs with the partner. I think that's very very intriguing. What kind of like landscape do you see out there, or demand do you see out there for Juice Robinson? Like, I mean, of course, you know, there's gonna be some independent shows that, you know, that mm-hmm. want him. Like, I know he's done some stuff with AAW in Chicago.
Yeah, his free agency comes at a time when there's a lot of other big names out there that we still don't know where they're going to end up yet. I think that's really the big thing. I don't see him as like a, you know, he's not a game changer. I think he's is a strong hand, so to speak. But I mean, there's a lot of strong hands out there right now with all the WB cuts. When we started this whole thing, I mean, so many talents out there where you're like, do I want Juice Robinson, or do I have an opportunity to bring in Keith Lee? Do I want Juice Robinson, or do I have an opportunity to bring in, you know, both Killer Cross and Scarlett in a package act? Mm. Do I want to give the ball to Buddy Matthews, and have him run with it? And all the people that got cut from earlier in the year, there's so much talent out there now that Impact seems like a good fit, but they may be like, look, we're looking at this landscape and talking to these talents, and we can add these three instead, and we think they're going to make a bigger impact for us. I don't know, because the market's flooded right now. So it just depends on if a promoter is like, if one of these organization owners or promoter is like, we see something, we're going to give them the ball and run with it. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and sort of going into the Wrestle Kingdom, with Shingo Takagi defending the IWGP World Heavyweight title against Okada on night one. I think he's going to beat Okada, and then I think he's going to beat Ospreay on night two. Mm. Ospreay is like, I think Ospreay is 3-1 on Shingo right now in singles matches. I still think about that match they had at Best of the Super Junior 2019. That was fucking great. And that was just a great match. I still remember that vividly. I think Shingo's going to beat Okada, and then he's going to beat Ospreay, and he's going to go in strong into that Noah show. And I think he's I could more than likely see him getting the win. I know he's going to be teaming with LIJ. I can definitely see him getting the win in that match, just to like being like the, you know, the big guy coming out of that match. I think that'd be cool. With Ospreay, I think it's gonna be a sort of interesting sort of time for him coming out of this, because I'm just curious as to I wonder if he'll, you know, just continue, like he'll go back to to the U.S. to keep working at JPW Strong Show, because you can only, you know, guess that he would have some other options out there, you know, if it came to a situation where Will Ospreay, has a decision on his hands to make. I can definitely see him, you know, probably wanting to field some offers and stuff like that. But, with Shingo, I definitely could see him beating both Okada and Ospreay, and then, you know, going into the Yokohama Arena show, going Sean representing New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I mean, going back to Ospreay as well, like, he's only 28. Like, I think he's one of those guys that a lot of people, like, they think he's a lot older than what he is, because he seems like he's been in it so long. But yeah, he's only 28 years old. So, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, one of the two major companies in the U.S., AEW or WWE, is probably Adam. And, you know, Jericho has been very open about, you know, he actually tried to get Ospreay in AEW when they first started. Mm-hmm. So I definitely don't see that as something that probably just go to the wayside and just forget about.
All right, let's go to through Impact and ROH real quick. Not a ton here. Impact announced that Hard to Kill was heading to Dallas in January. Mickey James defending against Deonna Purrazzo in a Knockouts title rematch. The first ever Women's Ultimate X match was announced at Turning Point. Results there: Moose retaining the world title over Eddie Edwards in a Full Metal Mayhem match. Jonah made his debut there, jumping Josh Alexander as he was doing a promo. And all the champions retained at the show. And then Throwback Throwdown 2 was set for December. Flipping to Ring of Honor as they kind of their march towards the end at Honor for All. Matt Taven and Mike Bennett winning the tag team titles over Dragon Lee and Kenny King. Bandido defeated Flamita in a no DQ match in the main event. The Briscoes defended the GCW titles on that show over Effie and AJ Gray. Final battle was beginning to take shape with Bandido and Jonathan Gresham announced as the main event, and then Dalton Castle defeated Dragon Lee for the TV title. And yeah, not a lot there, Andrew, but thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, with Gresham and Bandido, do you think they're I would say the tentative idea is that they continue to stretch of them defending their respective Ring of Honor World Championships and then having the big blow-off match when ROH plans to return for Supercard of Honor in 2022 or the April 2022 show. Do you think that's like an idea?
I think it's an idea, but there's a lot of time to go between now and then.
Yeah.
and a lot could happen. And that's the thing is, yeah. I honestly think they're legitimately cleaning the slate. And I'm not even fully confident they're going to come back. I think they have to have a much different plan. And I don't know what that plan is going to be different. And how the organization is going to make money. Cause you're going to have fans in attendance. You have to, how different are they from, if they're going to come back, kind of do the same thing, how much different are they than MLW or Impact or, you know, I think GCW, I've talked this on the show before, like GCW, I think kind of took their corner, and we'll see. But yeah, I think that's an idea. There's a lot of time to go between now and April. Put it that way.
Yeah, no, 100%. And Gresham, of course, they have him and Baron Black have the Terminus show coming up.
Yep.
You know, he's gonna be defending the ROH World Championship at that. Even on the Ring of Honor front, man, you got a talent like Roxy. You know, it seems like all the signs are pointing to, you know, her having a match with Deonna Purrazzo at some point. Deonna appeared at the Final Battle show, and you know, she was like, let's do everything on the line match, all titles on the line. Let's do something like that. And, you know, she's facing Mickey James at the Hard to Kill pay-per-view for the Knockouts title. I think that's definitely something that's going to be happening, her versus Roxy. Like, you want to know what? I think Roxy would actually do really well in, like, the sort of NXT 2.0/WWE system, considering the fact that I don't even think she's 20 yet. So I think that they're really looking for talents like her, mm-hmm. so they can, and then on top of that, she has name value. So I'm pretty sure she can make like a little like bargain there, or like, you know, as far as like contractual stuff, like I'm pretty sure she could probably get like a bigger offer than, you know, a talent who's just coming in fresh into wrestling, because she does have name value. I think she would fit really well. And then by the time she did about 3-4 years in WWE, she'd be like, what, 23, 24, and, you know, she'd still be fresh, and I'm pretty sure the scene would be very, very different, or it'll be very, very fresh. And, you mm-hmm. know, I think a talent like Roxy, I don't think she could really make a bad decision in this type of situation. Like, she can either, you know, continue doing what she does and, you know, work a lot of independent shows, or, you know, I just think that her being in that WWE system for a couple of years, now, not even the system, just more so being able to have so sort of the gains from WWE on a financial perspective are really like I think that that'd be really good. And then on top of that, like when she comes out of that, she'll still be young, and then you know the scene would be, you know, wide open. Things would be wide open for her. We're on top of having the name value of being in WWE for that period of time. So yeah, I think she has a lot of options. There's a lot of people that got a lot of options out here. Like the scene is, free agent scene is very much a flooded one, and I don't think there's any shortage of people to scoop up out here. Like even with AEW, like I was kind of surprised that they scooped up Jay Lethal. I really was, like, because it was I'm pretty sure you've heard, and it seems like there's a lot of controversy surrounding his name.
Yep.
You know, stemming from the speaking out allegations. And, you know, even with, you know, you can even say the same thing about Will Ospreay. It's a lot of controversy surrounding his name. But yeah, that's a whole deep dive that we can get into on another topic. But yeah, I was surprised that they scooped him up. But yeah, man, there's no shortage of, you know, talents out there to pick up from this free agent market. Like you mentioned, the WWE releases Ring of Honor's entire roster is free agents for the most part. So yeah, man, you want to know a person who is I'm also interested to see where he'll land is Roosh and Dragon Lee. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm pretty sure wherever they go, they'll probably be like a tandem. So you get one, you probably get the other.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a crowded market right now, man. It's very, very crowded.
It certainly is. Let's go over the, we'll talk about even more about this crowded market in the junk drawer. This is everything else that we didn't get to. So Danhausen was announced as having surgery for a broken tibia and a fibula, and also Mance Warner getting leg surgery as well. Remember, they had those freak accidents at the same night, the same show in Texas in November. Negra Casas, Leon Ruff announced as making their GCW debuts, and also Blake Christian was announced as returning to the promotion. GCW launched the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame. Jerry Lynn, Homicide, Ruckus, and Dave Prazak already announced for that. And Eddie Kingston was going to be set for their World on GCW show at the Hammerstein Ballroom, which sold out in like just a couple minutes in November. Heels on Stars was renewed for the second season. Oney Lorcan, his first action, or set for a big tournament after being released. He was set for the WXW 16-carat tourney over in Germany. Sabu said he thought he was finally going to be done in the ring. We'll see about that. Both Angelo and Mosca, yeah, wrestlers just never retire. They just take sabbaticals. Angelo Mosca and Judy Bagwell both passed away during the month. Tom Lawler's MLW deal expired. MLW War Chamber, Alex Kane won the openweight title, someone you talked to on your very podcast. 5150 won the tag team titles. Davey Richards won the Opera Cup. Contra Unit broke up in the War Chamber match, and which also saw the return of Jeff Cobb, a.k.a. Matanza Duran, to this show. MLW announced a co-promoted taping with The Crash for December, which is going to be the launch of MLW Azteca, which begins in January. MLW heading to Dallas for their first show of 2022 and the Von Erichs challenging for the tag team titles there. You mentioned Roxy before. She's making her debut at that show in January. RVD and Katie Forbes got married. Triple Mania Regia is going to air on Fight for the first time in a long time, kind of figure out some issues there. And yeah, after Kenny Omega had to vacate the title, a AAA five-way was set for the AAA Mega vacant title, rather. Jay Lethal, El Hijo de Vikingo, Bobby Fish, Bandido are part of that match. FTR and the Lucha Brothers were going to square off for the AAA tag team titles. Ric Flair relaunched his Woo Nation podcast. Young Rock 2, set to debut in March. Hard Times 2 for the NWA. They had that pay-per-view. Mick Foley made an appearance. All the champions retained. There were 9 title matches that include titles being defended from Impact, Ring of Honor, and the NWA. And then, for some reason, Austin Aries is on that show. And also Mike Knox returned to in-ring action on that show. Wrestling is so weird. Killer Cross was announced as his first action, set for a WrestlePro show. Bray Wyatt, his first work after being released, is going to be doing a feature film, and he was also booked for WrestleCon in 2022. Ric Flair, talking about him, said in his podcast that he would never go back to work for WWE and that he was not a fan of Nick Khan. And then PWG announced that Bolo was going to return for the first time in 2 years in late January. Thoughts on any of that?
That was a lot.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff to have. Ric Flair saying that he would never go back to the I was like, brother, I don't think they want you back. that's the thing. I don't think they want you back. But yeah, the GCW Hall of Fame, that was something that caught my ear. I think Dave Praise and of course everybody that's getting inducted to that Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame deserves to be in there. But like, I think Dave Prazak, man, like he's one of those like unsung heroes of the independent scene, considering what he's done with Shimmer, along with Allison Danger. Like, I feel like Dave, and of course his work in Ring of Honor as well. Man, I feel like Dave is really gonna go down as like one of those like, yeah, like unsung heroes, and people who know him will always speak well of him. But I don't think he ever got like that really like sort of national notoriety that he could have. And I mean, that's not everybody's destiny. You know, not everybody's going to be a household name. But I feel like there are so many people in professional wrestling that are connected to Dave Prazak and who he's helped and who he's helped put in position to be successful, that they will always speak of him very highly. So I'm glad to see him getting this honor, because he has done like a great deal for professional wrestling. So it's very cool to see him get this honor. And then Homicide's being inducted to the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame as well. Body of work speaks for itself. Homicide, like, I remember when I first saw Homicide when he was in TNA, I thought Homicide was TNA. I thought Homicide was like the coolest wrestler. I thought he was cool as hell, especially with the theme song of him and Hernandez. I thought they were cool. And yeah, man, I think Jerry Lynn's going in. He's been inducted by X-Pac. Tracy Smothers being inducted into the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame as well. So yeah, man, I think that's a good thing that they're doing. That's the night before their Hammerstein Ballroom show, which is massive. Like, GCW selling out Hammerstein, that's big right there for them. I'm interested to see like the rest of their card they put out there. I know it's going to be Gresham versus Blake Christian for the Ring of Honor world title. So yeah, it's definitely going to be cool to see like the rest of the card that they put out. Like you mentioned, Eddie Kingston's going to be appearing there. Yeah, man, it was a... What were some of the other topics that you made? Because it was some good stuff in there, man.
Let's see. We had all the stuff with MLW. We have Jeff Cobb coming back. Tom Lawler gone. They had their War Chamber. Had some titles change there. Again, RVD getting married. That was kind of weird. I think, kind of the big stuff here, obviously the Triple Mania stuff, is they kind of rebrand, and Bray Wyatt doing a feature film with the NWA Austin Bray Aries Wyatt. And all that.
We're Bray Wyatt. We talk about like Keith Lee. Man, if there is somebody that I think is probably gonna have one of the best post WWE interviews, it's gonna be Bray. I'm telling you, like the stories that I know that he has are probably some of the most ridiculous things that we probably are ever gonna hear from a talent that have spent that much time in WWE, because he's been there for a while. He was there in the FCW days, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's been there a long time.
And then, like, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of things that a lot of people want to hear from Bray, but this, the sort of the creation and the fallout of the Fiend character is going to be something that I think is going to be a lot of people are going to pay attention to, because I think we all can sort of agree that things really went left at that Hell in a Cell 2019 with Rollins. Like that's when it just like that thing was dead in the water. Like it was over after that. And with that whole character, I always felt like the best way to go about this character was to never ever put a title on this character. Don't do it. It's not going to work. And of course, WWE, a month into it, they decided to throw him in the title picture. I just never thought those type of mystical or mythical or mysterious type characters, to the sense of like where they have like mask and, you know, they don't talk and stuff like that. I mean, but he had the other version of Bray Wyatt, but I just felt like that was never the way to go with that character. And I feel like as soon as you start putting titles and try to make this character like a part of your main event scene, to the point where they sort of need to be on TV, then it's going to be an issue. Like, I feel like they should have just kept it solely as like an attraction for the most part.
Yep.
Like, but they, you know, they wore it out, and you know what, they do what they do most of the time. Like, once they see there's no use for you, it's like, you know, you're on your own. But you know, he was there for a long time, you know, I'm glad that he was able to win the WWE Championship once. I know a lot of people were calling for that to happen for a while. So, you know, that was, you know, but yeah, I'm definitely interested to hear Bray's post WWE comments and to sort of hear about what ideas were his and what ideas weren't his and stuff like that. Yep. Not all of them was a hit. It was some of them that was duds, and then, you know, that's okay. But yeah, man, like it's so many people that we haven't even heard from, like Nixon Newell, Tegan Knox. You know, you're interesting to hear from her. And you know, your point about Tom Lawler, like him, his MLW deal being done. Like he's been going hard as the strong openweight champion over in NJPW. Yeah, like he's been champion since like what, April? Like I know he won the inaugural tournament. Beat Brody King in the tournament. I can see Lawler holding on to that title past January, and I can probably see him dropping the title to like a Alex Coughlin. I can definitely see him dropping the title to him at some point, like maybe sort of like a pass the torch type of situation to one of the Alex Coughlin, he's technically still a young lion, I believe. So I can definitely see like that being like a, you know, that's one of our guys from the young lion perspective. So I think that would be kind of cool. But yeah, man, it's been an eventful November, to say the least. Like wrestling is like one of those things, man. It never ever slows down. Nope. The cycle is always something happening. I'm pretty sure by the end of next week, it'll be you could probably do a podcast alone about all the stuff that's happening come early 2022 with all the different shows and stuff like that.
You got that right. So we'll be doing that at some point, but you've been very kind with your time, Andrew, very generous. And I want to give you a chance once again to plug where people can read you, see you, listen to you, feel you. The floor is yours. Go for it.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you having me on. This was a good time. They can check me out on Twitter at @ADThompson_. My interviews at Andrew Thompson Interviews YouTube channel. Everything is linked in my Twitter bio. You can check all that stuff out. You can check out my written work over at postwrestling.com. I'm part of two podcasts there, the Bushby and Thompson Wrestling Adventure that I host with Martin Bushby, where once a month we go back and look at a retro event. We cover PWG shows, Ring of Honor, WWE, NWA. We go back and look at everything. And I'm also a part of the Nubian Wrestling Advocates podcast with Nate Milton and Chris Ely over on Post Wrestling. We dive into all topics, man. We have very, 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 very informal discussions, man, about what it means to be black in professional wrestling and what it means to be black in wrestling media, and you know, all sorts of different discussions surrounding that. It's always one of my favorite discussions to have with those two and the variety of guests that we have on that podcast. So yeah, you go check all those things out. And yeah, thank you, Josh, for having me on this podcast, man. This is very cool, and I was looking forward to this.
Great. Me as well. I'm glad to have you on. And yeah, eventful month of November. And yeah, have a great 2022, Andrew. It's crazy 2021. Hopefully take a break from this wrestling news for like an hour or something like that. But thanks so much for stopping by.
Nah, I appreciate you, man. Thank you again.
All right. Big thanks to Andrew Thompson for stopping by and spending so much time with me. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, two guys just start talking about wrestling. You never know how long a conversation is going to go. So I appreciate your checking in with that. We have two more episodes in the series left to go. We have December 2021, which will drop either on Monday or Tuesday. And then we have the final installment of the MMA Gear and Review series, myself and Paul Fontaine. I believe we're going to shoot to record that on Monday. And that'll be out either Monday or Tuesday as well. And then we'll be all done. We'll have a little epilogue, probably in that December show, and just kind of like try to wrap this whole wild year up that has already started crazy with January 1st. 2022 year in view series already going with Brock Lesnar winning the WWE title after Roman Reigns got COVID. So yeah, for 2022, we're already off and running, but we're almost done to look back at 2021. So until Monday and Tuesday, insert catchphrase here.